The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
My guest today has written the book, The Sexual State, How Elite Ideologies Are Destroying Lives, and Why the Church Was Right All Along.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Here we are, friends, together on the front lines of the culture wars. Not just using the weapons of politics, not relying on intimidation or brute force, but overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love, overcoming the flesh with the spirit. Friends, we're here together making a difference. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Jennifer Morse. We'll be talking about this whole sexual revolution that's been fought for so many years and how the church has been right with its sexual ethic. After all, I think you're going to be edified, encouraged by this conversation. Before then, I will take calls on any subject under the sun that you want to talk to me about. 866-348-7884. Totally off the topic that we'll be talking about at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to take some calls before then. A few things first. Number one, I find it so interesting when I debunked about Jesus coming in 2023, no, it's 2028, no, it's 2030, no, it's this, that. And I said, hey, look, I don't believe in a pre-trib rapture, but I don't divide over it. We will be caught up to meet Jesus when he returns. I simply believe it is at his second coming, at his arrival, not 7 years before that. I don't believe there's a second coming and a third coming. So he appears in the clouds of glory for the entire world to see. We are caught up to meet him. The dead in Messiah resurrected first. We who are alive and remain caught up to meet him as per 1 Corinthians 15 and 1 Thessalonians 4. And we now escort him back as he establishes his kingdom on the earth. I've had people rebuke me and call me a heretic. You deny we're going to meet Jesus. No, it's a question of when. It's the question of when. But bottom line, the emphasis is not to get in a fight with you about doctrine. The emphasis is not to get half the audience cheering me on and the other half of the audience upset. The emphasis is to say, let's live for God today. Whatever we believe about tomorrow, let it positively impact the way we live today. And I am not one of those who says, for sure we are the last generation, and for sure everything's getting worse, so why bother throwing the towel? No, that is not my heart. That is not my understanding of Scripture. We may be in the last generation. I hope we are. I want to see Jesus return in my lifetime. That would be the most glorious imaginable way to leave this world and to see everything that he wants to do before his return accomplished. That would be beyond glorious. That would be a dream come true. But whether we're the last generation or not, as Dr. Josh Peters, our missions director, has often said, this is our last generation, right? We're here. For us, it may not be the last generation, but it's our last generation. So I want to run my race. I want to encourage you to run your race. I want to stand strong today so when I stand before the Lord, whether it's a year from now or 100 years from now, that his return, whenever we give account to him when we leave this world, I want to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. I want to see that divine smile. I want to know that I please and honor the Lord. I want to know in that sense, I've left it all in the ring. I've gone for it. I've run my race. I want to be able to say with Paul at the end of my life, and therefore really at the end of every day, I've fought the good fight. I've kept the faith. I finished the race. And if that's the case, you may believe in a pre-trib rapture or not. You may be pre-mill, on-mill, post-mill. We may have some differences on some of these things. Questions are we living for God today in a way that makes sense in the light of eternity? That's it. Otherwise, I'm not here to divide over eschatology. I'm going to lay out clearly where I see pitfalls and different viewpoints. I'm going to lay out clearly where I have concerns about how things play out with regard to Israel, etc. But bottom line, my goal is to help you bear maximum fruit. My goal is to see you healthy, thriving, spirit, soul, mind, body. My goal is to stand by your side to equip you because you're on the front lines. And this is the other point I want to make. Then I'm going to the phones. it is so critically important that we all take a stand, that we all determine to do what's right, that we all determine to speak. You see, if one person speaks up and no one else does, it's easy to cancel that person. It's easy to push that person off, marginalize them, get out of here. So one person says, you know, I used to be gay. I'm not. I'm ex-gay. God changed me. He did it. Well, no, that doesn't really happen. You're never really gay, or you're bisexual, you're denying it. Well, when it's hundreds, when it's thousands, it's a little harder to deny that. When so many people are now, quote, detransitioning, they had sex change surgery, they had hormone treatments, maybe there were 13, 14, other 17, 19, 20, 22, and they're detransitioning, and they're bringing lawsuits against hospitals and doctors. Well, it's a tragic shame that this ever happened. It is a tragic shame that we allowed this kind of child abuse on our watch. It's a tragic shame that President Biden and others are fighting for this very, quote, right now. And I know in their mind it's for the good of the kids, they're going to commit suicide, they'll be happier if you do this. I understand their arguments. Bottom line is, more and more are speaking out. It's hard to silence all of them. You ever played that game Whack-A-Mole? It was an arcade game, right? So this little mole would come up and you got this mallet and you'd hit it, but then pop up and hit it there, and then boom, 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 and you try to get really fast until you can't whack them so much. Well, we're like the Whack-A-Moles in that regard. If millions of us stand up for our testimony, for what's right in the workplace, stand up ethically, stand against injustice. Look, you know, the back of segregation, the back of slave trade, these things could have been broken so much earlier if people who knew it was wrong spoke up. See, it's just one person. You're going to lose everything. It's worth it. But when it's hundreds, when it's thousands, it's not the case. So kids in school, I'm not saying be obnoxious. I'm not saying be self-righteous. But don't just go along with the status quo if it violates your convictions. Talk to your mom and dad and say, hey, they want me to do this. I feel it's wrong. Say, all right, we're standing with you. Well, if you're not the only one doing it, things will change. So quick illustration, and then I'm going to go to the phones. So one of my colleagues, I mentioned this on the air, I mentioned it again. He texted me a few months back now and says, hey, I just want to check on this. I believe my position's right, but I want to make sure I'm not being too hard. My daughter's in college. She is part of a team that's working on a publication, and the incoming students are required to give their PGPs, their preferred gender pronouns. And, you know, she has an issue with it. I don't believe she should do it. What do you think? You know, you just go along. Do you want to fit in? And then they get to know you. You can be a good witness and just be a peacemaker. Or are you participating in fantasy? Are you helping people make wrong decisions? Are you affirming something you don't believe in? I said, of course you don't do it under no circumstances. I said, you can have a little fun with it. You know, say my pronouns are Jesus is Lord and just get a little smile. But no, just explain why you can't do it in good conscience. So she, feeling this way herself and with her father's affirmation and then secondarily with mine, she goes and talks to the professor and he says, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to make it optional for those that are incoming on the team here, whether you want to use your PGPs or not. Well, there are, I guess, three young people coming in on the team and all declined, all three declined. And the professor realized, okay, I'm going to have to rethink the policy because he just assumed a certain thing. Well, this is the right thing and the kids want it and it's proper, etc. And it's the woke thing, whatever word he would have used. And they all didn't want to do it. Well, it made him think differently. So I'm just encouraging you, when you have a choice, when a situation presents itself and you have to make an ethical or righteous choice, act as if, number one, you're going to have to go straight from there to appear before the throne of God. So do the right thing. And then secondly, act as if you are one of millions. Think, okay, if I do it, and they do it, and they do it, and they do it. Instead of the dominoes going one way, the dominoes will start to go the other way. Friends, the tide is turning. The tide is turning. There's always going to be back and forth, ups and downs here until Jesus returns. But the tide is turning. Good things are happening. Let us stand and speak what's right and do what's right and live what's right by the millions, by the tens of millions across America. and we'll be amazed to see how much more quickly the tide turns. I'm one, you're one, but together we are many. All right, let us go to John in Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thank you. I got a couple of questions, and if you don't mind, the first one is will this gospel be preached in the millennial reign?
Will this gospel be preached in the millennial reign? Does not seem to be what Scripture says. Scripture does speak of all nations coming to Jerusalem to learn from the God of Israel, but it doesn't specific. We are not going to be doing the job of evangelism. The church will have been the church up until that point, and you could raise the question of how will people in the millennial kingdom get right with God? Will we still be pointing to the cross in the same way, etc.? It just, you could say the gospel is always going to be preached. There's just nothing in the New Testament that says that it will. In this, it's certainly not in the way we do it today, because things will be different. Jesus will be there, accessible, ruling and reigning out of Jerusalem. Justice will be perfectly enforced on the earth. So it seems that things will be different at that point.
Okay, because if there had to be a blood sacrifice and the cross was the blood sacrifice, then, again, wouldn't we be pointing them to Jesus for salvation? Like here. Because right. There's going to be mortals in the millennial reign.
There's going to be, right, for those of us that understand that there's going to be a physical millennium on the earth. But are they being saved into the same ecclesia, the same family in the same way? If they are, in other words, if there is salvation from sin in the same way then that there is now, well, then of course it's got to be through the cross. Some would argue, and this is a fair point to consider, where it will be the job of Israel then as the priestly nation in the millennial kingdom with a physical temple to use that to point to the cross, to point to the sacrifice of the Messiah, to explain it in that way. But certainly salvation from sin can only come in one way. There's just nothing that says the gospel is going to be preached in this way or that our job during the millennial kingdom as resurrected saints is to evangelize. I don't see it like that. Things will be different, and we just don't have all the information. All right, we got a break. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. Grab your question. And then Sean in League City, Texas, I'm eager to get your question. Stay right here, 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, I'll tell you a funny story on the other side of the break really quickly, and then I'll get right back with John. 866-348-7884. First, this friendly word from our co-sponsor, Trivita.
I'm Paul Burnett, a board-certified doctor of holistic health, and I want to take this opportunity to talk to you about the importance of healthy blood flow and how it's enhanced by a miracle molecule known as nitric oxide. You see, blood vessels release nitric oxide, which increases blood flow, known as something called vasodilation. At Trivita, we take blood flow seriously for our members, and we've developed a nitric oxide plus supplement that has been formulated with natural ingredients designed to maximize nitric oxide production in our blood vessels, which increases blood flow. You may be wondering why you don't have as much energy as you used to. One study that I came across revealed that by the age of 40, we only produce about 50% of the nitric oxide production as compared to our 20s, and by the age of 70, the study showed that we're only producing about 15 to 25%. I have good news. As we age, there's another way for our body to increase nitric oxide production, and That's by converting nitrates in vegetables like beetroot into nitric oxide. Bottom line, with more nitric oxide, we stimulate more blood flow to our vital organs and we experience more energy while supporting healthy blood pressure. Trivita's Nitric Oxide Plus has been formulated to increase nitric oxide production and blood flow at every age.
To place your order for products to support your wellness goals, call 1-800-771-5584 or online at trivita.com. As a Trivita introductory offer, use promo code BROWN25 and receive a 25% discount on the products of your choice. Call 1-800-771-5584. 800-771-5584. May you live with greater wellness.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, just a quick fun story with our listening family here, and then right back to the phones. And bottom of the hour, I bring on Dr. Jennifer Morse. It's going to be a great discussion that we have. So yesterday, I was wearing a shirt, a new shirt that's... the arms are just, the sleeves are a little shorter, so it exposed a bit more of my arms. And so, one of our folks viewing on YouTube happened to mention my Trivita muscles, because the muscles on the arm. Now, I wasn't flexing to try to show off or anything, but actually, nitric oxide I found has really helped with just the overall energy, blood flow, oxygenation as I'm working out and pushing harder. But the MyoHealth, for the first time in years, I felt like, wow, even though I'm older, I can actually build some muscle and just get healthier in these ways in general. And then after I do a real intense workout, I'll drink some more MyoHealth just for the immediate replenishing. So check this out. If you work out or not, it's still a good investment in your body and an investment in our ministry too, because Trivita's generosity. So that number to call is 800-771-5584, 800-771-5584, or you can go to trivita.com, TRIVITA.com. Use the code BROWN25 to get your special discount and to ensure that a substantial portion of your order will be donated to the Line of Fire. Okay, with that, let's go back to John in Salt Lake City. Your second question, sir.
Okay, from the Old Testament, the sojourners or the heathens would be brought into the tribes, and then they would get circumcised. They get into the covenant. Now, in the New Testament, in Romans, it says if we were grafted into Israel. So, if we're grafted into Israel,
it doesn't say
we're adopted or grafted into Israel in Romans.
Grafted into the olive tree.
Excuse me?
It grafted into the olive tree. It doesn't say grafted into Israel. Because
that's correct. It is. Right. Isn't the olive tree like a symbol of Israel?
Yes, but beyond. In other words, Paul refers to the believers, the Gentiles, in Romans 11 as Gentiles, as distinct from Israel, and says, I'm writing to Gentiles, and as much as I'm an apostle to the Gentiles, because I want you to provoke Israel to envy. So he never says you became Israel. That's the whole thing. And then elsewhere, in like 1 Corinthians 7, he's explicit. If you were called, meaning called to the faith, circumcised, don't become uncircumcised. If you were called to the faith, uncircumcised, don't become circumcised. So it's not about taking on Jewish identity or being Jewish or saying we're Israel. Nowhere in the New Testament is the church explicitly called Israel. Even Galatians 6:16, Israel of God, is most likely speaking of Jewish believers within the body.
Okay. Another question, because Old Testament claims that once you come into the tribe back then, the heathen, it didn't say Jew or lost Jew, it said heathen, they are given inheritance into the tribe they're associated with when they get into the covenant.
Well, where do you actually see laws for general, quote, heathen.
No, I'm just
joining a tribe of Israel. It's not even something that comes up in the laws, because basically these people are on the outside.
Oh, but anyway,
John, we're in a new covenant, and our heritage, we now have an eternal inheritance in the Lord through Yeshua.
So there is
brothers and sisters. We have an eternal inheritance in the Lord. We have eternal life now. We have the Holy Spirit now. We have forgiveness of sins now. That's what we have. That's our inheritance.
What is the difference between a Jew and a Gentile?
In the Lord? Same as the difference between a male and a female, that we have certain distinctions in our calling and background, but we're 1,000% equal, 1,000% equal in terms of equal forgiveness, equal status. No one's higher or lower. There's no caste system. There's no class system. In Paul's words, the same Lord is Lord of all, richly blessing all who call on him. So in that sense, male, female, Jew, Gentile, we are 1,000% equal in God's sight. Yet a man's not a woman, Jew's not a Gentile. So a Jewish person will have a certain history and connection and perhaps covenantal calling to live out some of the aspects of Torah life as an ongoing witness to the Jewish community and as further attestation of Jewish identity. But it's not a distinction in terms of nature. It just may be certain practices. A Jewish believer may be more prone to observe the seventh-day Sabbath, and a Gentile Christian may be more prone to be in a church that is emphasizing the resurrection on the eighth day, or the first day of the week, on a Sunday. But we're one in the Lord. Hey, I answered a bunch of questions, which I normally don't do, so let me get to another call here. Sean in League City, Texas. Welcome, sir, to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, how are you today?
Doing great, thanks.
Good, good. I have a quick question. I was reading in Matthew chapter 8 today and got to verse 16 and 17 when it says, when evening had come, they brought to him many who are demon-possessed, and he cast out the spirits with a word, and he healed all who were sick, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, he himself took our infirmities and bore our sicknesses. So I always thought that was something that was part of the, after he died, but it says that right in chapter 8. And so two things that come to mind is like, I mean, this is kind of a weird, I never thought about this, but did he in some kind of sense like absorb the, the sicknesses as he went, not excluding?
Yeah, so tell you, Sean, I'm going to cut you off only so I can answer your great question, which I dealt with in my book, Israel's Divine Healer, before the break. Otherwise, I have a guest coming on. So I apologize for cutting you off, but this is the only way I can answer your question. When you look at Matthew 8:17, which is quoting from Matthew's own translation of the Hebrew, as best as we can tell, surely he's borne our sicknesses and carried our pains. When does that happen, according to Isaiah 53? When is it that the Jewish people recognize, surely he suffered in our place? It's when he's hanging on the cross. So you're 100% right. That is something that has to do with the cross. Matthew is applying it here to say in a very literal way through his entire ministry that he is, in a sense, entering into our suffering. So it's not that he literally is absorbing sicknesses, right? But that he is now entering into our sufferings. So his whole ministry on the earth is, in a sense, vicarious. It is substitutionary. He's taking on our sickness, our pain, our agony, our lostness, our alienation. He's coming into our world, taking those things on himself, and then going to the root cause of all sickness, of all disease, of all pain, of all lostness, of all alienation, of all rebellion. He's going to the root cause of all of it, namely our sin, and nailing that to the cross. And then out of the cross flow all these benefits back to our lives. So Matthew is taking a verse that applies to the cross and applying it to the earthly ministry of Jesus to indicate that his whole ministry, in a sense, is vicarious. Of course, he has to pay for our sins on the cross. That's when it all happens, with his death. but it is a vicarious ministry of entering into our sufferings and taking them on his shoulders until he deals with the root cause of all pain, namely our sin. And we see many of the benefits of that immediately in this life with forgiveness of sins, with removal of guilt, sometimes with physical healing, with mental healing, with peace, with joy, and then ultimately with the resurrection, we'll experience the benefits of it forever. I believe the MacArthur Study Bible says that he carried our sicknesses in his earthly ministry, died for our sins on the cross. It makes a distinction that shouldn't be made, because Matthew's using a verse from the cross, a Jewish confession recognizing he was suffering for us when he hung on the cross, applying it to his earthly ministry. So you're definitely asking the right question, going in the right direction. That's why I wanted to give you the answer before the break, because right now we are out of time. Okay, we will be right back, friends, with Dr. Jennifer Morse. I think you're going to find this encouraging, edifying, eye-opening. Let us be people of courage. Let us not cower in the day of battle. Let us stand, do what is right. We'll be right back. You can't resist us! Hey friends, this is Dr. Michael Brown. I want to invite you to join our support team. Make an investment of $1 a day that will absolutely last forever. You know, the Lord has given us a holy mandate to blanket America with the Line of Fire broadcast. And on a regular basis, we hear from folks writing in, Dr. Brown, I used to be a practicing homosexual. I listened to you. I heard grace and truth together. I was changed. We hear from pastors who say, thank you for speaking with compassion, but giving us backbone and courage. And we know across America, so many believers are getting healthy and strong through listening to the broadcast, through listening to these messages as we tackle the controversies, the most difficult issues of the day. We even hear from former Muslims who've come to faith, from Jewish people who now believe in Jesus, Yeshua the Messiah, through this broadcast and our resources. So join our support team. $1 or more per day makes you an official torchbearer. Immediately, you will get access to hundreds of hours of terrific online classes and exclusive video content. Every single month, we'll send you a brand new audio message and along with it, an insider prayer newsletter where we'll talk about the things that are going to be coming in our ministry and share some of the amazing testimonies of the fruit that you are a part of. And when you do sign up, I want to give you two books as a special gift. First, Compassionate Father, A Consuming Fire. Who is the God of the Old Testament? I take the best of my Hebrew and Old Testament scholarship, wrap it together in this book that you'll find eye-opening, answering many of the questions you have. And then Revolution, my classic book that tells you how to wage war the Jesus way, overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love. We are transformed. We can bring transformation to the nation. So call this number now, 800-538-5275. That's 800-538-5275. Say, I'd like to become a torchbearer, or go to askdrbrown.org. Click on Donate Monthly Support.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on the Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. My guest, Dr. Jennifer Morse, has written a number of books, most recently, The Sexual State, How Elite Ideologies Are Destroying Lives While the Church Was Right All Along. She holds a PhD at the University from the University of Rochester. She's taught economics at Yale and George Mason. I don't know if I knew that Jennifer taught economics, but she's the founder of the Ruth Institute, Interfaith International Coalition to Defend the Family, Build the Civilization of Love. She is one of the strong Catholic leaders in the nation today, standing for what's right based on Christian faith. We've got a whole bunch of things to talk about. Jennifer, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks for coming on today.
Oh, I'm glad to do it, Michael. It's been a long time since we've been on the radio together.
Yeah. I remember last time I was on your show. That was a ways back. Anyway. So What's happening in your world these days that gets you right in the crosshairs of the Cultural Revolution?
Oh, well, I defend traditional marriage, Michael, if you can imagine such a thing. Children need their parents, and so therefore grown-ups need to behave. And the traditional Christian sexual morality protected the interests of children. And the modern sexual revolution, of course, does not protect the interests of children. And so there are only, 10 or 12 or 20 or 50 different ways that the sexual revolution attacks the rights of children and the interests of children. And so every time I open my mouth, I'm in trouble with someone. So, but that's the basic thing that we do here at the Ruth Institute is, we try to inspire Christians to understand that we should not be apologizing for our traditional Christian sexual ethics. And these people who say, oh, that's all outdated, that's outmoded, we're so smart, we're so modern, all those taboos were there for no reason, that's not true. Those taboos supposedly served an important purpose, which is to protect the interests of children in having a lifelong relationship with both their mom and their dad. And when you have a lot of family breakdown, a lot of people switching around their sex partners and all that type of stuff, that's just really, really diminishes the children's chances of having that happen.
So Jennifer, if you're going to talk about, in a summary way, a summarial way, some of the negative effects long-term of the sexual revolution, if we just say, well, morals have changed, people say, well, those are your morals. Doesn't make them right or wrong. But you're saying that it brings tangible harm. The sexual revolution is not just about thinking differently. It has brought tangible harm on generations of children. I know it's a big, big question, but in your mind, what are some of the most glaring examples of the destructive effects of the sexual revolution?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that, and I'm glad you mentioned my book, too, because in my book I talk about all of this, of course, but one of the big ones is the family breakdown through divorce. The impact of divorce on children has been studied very thoroughly. There was a big study that started right after California went to no-fault divorce in the 70s, and this psychiatrist called Judith Wallerstein followed a series of families for 25 years. She started out being a big booster of no-fault divorce. She thought, the kids will get over it, everybody will get over it, everybody moves on, it's going to be fine. But the fact is, if you look at one study after another, it doesn't matter what dimension you look at, children suffer from divorce. And whether it's their health when they're first born, whether it's their social and emotional development, whether it's their academic development, all the way to the point where when they're making their own decisions about getting married and forming relationships of their own, they have a lot more trouble doing that. And so those are statistics, Michael. You can't argue with the statistics. I mean, there's a survey paper covered 30 pages of studies with 330 footnotes, okay? And all of them point to the same kind of stuff. So all kind of things have been measured. And Judith Wallerstein, when she was interviewing people, because she's not collecting numbers in the same way that a statistician would, she's talking to the people. And what she saw is already at the 10-year mark, she's like, these kids are not getting over it, And then by the time she got to the 25-year mark, she was able to say that when the children of divorce reach young adulthood, their problems have not faded. Their problems have not gone away. Their problems crescendo. Because this is where their ability to form relationships of their own and their fears and their lack of skills and their lack of role models and the trauma that a lot of them have been through, that's where it all comes to a head, and they are afraid and they have difficulty and they head for the hills. They're easily spooked when things go wrong. So there's simply no question that divorce has been harmful to children, and anybody tells you otherwise is not paying attention.
Right, and you hit on just one aspect of the sexual revolution,
yeah.
and that's made especially no-fault divorce so prevalent, right? But that's a massive one, and it has been studied. And that was the whole thing. You do it for the sake of the kids, Why have the kids grow up in the midst of conflict only to find out what it took 25 years of studying to find out what believers had been all it's been saying? No, there's a reason that these parameters are in place. And you know how it is. Generally speaking, when you deviate from God's norms, from God's commands, from God's standards, you don't always see negative results immediately. Just like if someone starts to eat in an unhealthy way, it may not catch up for them for some time, or they may not see the weight gain for a little while. But each day, it's further and further off the mark. So within Ruth Institute, what do you do? How do you do it? And are we making progress?
Well, first of all, I want to endorse what you just said, okay, because really what you're talking about there is the natural law, what we would call the natural law. And as you probably know, Catholics have been talking about natural law for a long, long time, you know, I think at some point in studying these things, you know, I would look at the statistics and go, gosh, this is really terrible. And I would try to explain to people the statistics. And of course, what would happen is that young people, you know, college students or whatever, they would say, well, my parents were divorced. My mom was a single mom. I turned out okay. And I realized, wait a minute, I'm not doing this right. I'm going about this wrong. And I started to think on exactly what you just said. If you deviate from God's law, you're going to see negative consequences sooner or later. So I started talking about some of those. I started talking about how, you know, yes, there are single parents and divorced parents, and they're doing the best they can, but still there are these problems that emerge when somebody gets a new boyfriend, the wife gets a new boyfriend, or the dad gets a new girlfriend. The children feel left behind. The children of the first union feel like leftovers from that first union because mom is now interested in her new boyfriend. She gets married. They have kids together. The two of them are focused on the new baby, and the child from the previous union feels left out. And the child from that previous union goes from one house to the other every week, and what they see is their half-brothers, their half-sisters, they get to be with their mom and dad all the time. And they see hanging on the wall pictures of their half-brother and sister with both parents. They see both halves of that child's family, photos all over the wall. There's no pictures of him with both his mom and dad, you know? And so I start talking like this, and the college students are like, oh, my gosh. And then they come up to you and start telling you stuff.
Mm.
You know, I've had kids. I was in North Carolina, Michael, not too long ago in April. I was at a big Catholic conference called Ignited by Truth, and I was said pretty much what I just said as part of a 45-minute talk on this subject. And sure enough, at my book table, a young lady came up with tears in her eyes. And she said, Dr. Morris, you are the first adult I have ever heard say that divorce is hard on kids.
Mm.
Okay? Now, and honestly, the remarriage is the thing that really causes the problems. Well, now you think about Matthew 19, and what is Jesus telling you? You can separate from an abusive spouse. He didn't say that, but we could read into that. But he's saying, don't take another spouse. It's that second spouse that causes so much divided loyalty and chaos and confusion in the lives of the children. So anyway, you know, that's just another way of saying the Son of God knew what he was talking about, Michael. Mm. Surprise, surprise, everybody, but the Son of God knew what he was talking about. So...
So
anyway,
Ruth Institute.
You asked me a different question, Michael. Yeah. I forget what you asked me.
Ruth Institute. Sorry. Tell us about the work of Ruth Institute.
Yes, yes. So the Ruth Institute, we have a very busy website with a YouTube channel and a Facebook page. So we are posting things every day on Facebook. We are posting two or three videos a week on our YouTube channel. And what I try to do, I have a program called the Dr. J Show, where I interview people who know what they're talking about in some aspect or another, you know. And so sometimes I'll have an expert on there. I'll have a psychiatrist or a doctor who knows about the physiology of pornography or a therapist. There's different people with different kinds of expertise about the harms of the sexual revolution and the benefits of traditional Christian sexual morality. Sometimes I'll have people, what we call witnesses, Michael, people who have lived some aspect of the sexual revolution and can tell you that it was no fun. You know, they can tell you what it was really like. We have quite a few, for example, ex-gays who come on the show. Because you want to talk about people who are persecuted.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to exist. You know, they've been completely erased from society, you know. So we give them a platform. We've had detransitioners come on, you know, people who tried to live as a person of the opposite sex, who did all kinds of things to their bodies in some cases. And they testify, hey, you know, here's what I was thinking when I went down this path. Why didn't anybody stop me? Why didn't anybody say, let's look at the underlying issues instead of going straight to the medical stuff, you know? And then sometimes we have activists on, Michael, different organizations who are in some way or another addressing some aspect of this problem, because, of course, the sexual revolution is immense, right? So that's our combination of activists, scholars, survivors, and we try to be a hub for different kinds of activities so that when people are looking for information about some aspect of these problems, they can come to us. If we don't have it, we can probably figure out where it is, you know. But the fact is, we got a lot of stuff on our website, Michael, a lot of information.
All right, so friends, the place to go, ruthinstitute.org, ruthinstitute.org. I've got a few more minutes on the other side of the break with my guest, Dr. Jennifer Morse, M-O-R-S-E, if you want to check out her books, ruthinstitute.org. We come back. I want to ask, well, these elite ideologies, who are the elitists who are the they that are influencing so many in such a negative way or have influenced? We'll be right back.
Have you had a setback from an injury, accident, or surgery that left you feeling weaker and a loss of strength? Or are you feeling the effects of aging and just don't feel like you have the stamina or energy you used to? Then MyoHealth might be an answer to your prayers. Backed by 24 human clinical studies and over $20 million in government-funded research, MyoHealth contains a perfect balance of all 9 essential amino acids. With MyoHealth, you can rebuild your strength, improve your balance and mobility, have more energy while restoring your health and vitality, and start building new, lean, stronger muscle in as little as 30 days. By combining MyoHealth with a healthy diet and regular exercise, you can feel stronger at any age, have more energy, and live a life with vitality. Put the power of MyoHealth to work for you.
I started working out consistently for the first time in years, and I've lost 50 pounds. I've been lifting weights, I've been swimming, and then the muscle mass, that's what really surprises me. I can't believe at my age, I'll be 73 this fall, my life has changed. I'm not the same anymore. MyoHealth changed my life, definitely, and I just thank God for it.
I would definitely recommend MyoHealth.
I'm sold on MyoHealth.
MyoHealth tastes great, and it helps me in the gym.
I feel like I've gotten my strength back.
My upper arms are tighter.
I have a great deal more energy.
I encourage anybody to try MyoHealth.
It really works.
Call 1-800-771-5584 or online at trivita.com to place your order for products to support your wellness goals. As a Trivita introductory offer, use promo code BROWN25 and receive a 25% discount on the products of your choice. Call 1-800-771-5584. 800-771-5584.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Do you get my emails? No? Seriously? Oh, because every week we let you know, here are the latest articles I've written. It's only about 5 articles a week. You found them really, really interesting reads, informative, keep you up to date on what's happening in the world and how we respond to it. So we let you know, here are the latest articles, links to each of them. Here are the latest videos, because we put out all kinds of interesting videos on interesting subjects. We've got a new resource offer. I'm taking a trip to Israel. I'm going to be speaking in your area. This is how we stay in touch with you, through the emails, letting you know. So take a moment, go to AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. Sign up for the emails, and we'll put you immediately in our welcome tour. You'll enjoy it. More about my own story from LSD to PhD, more about the 3 R's of our ministry and how we can be of service to you. So AskDrBrown.org. You should also, I strongly encourage you to download our app, Ask Dr. Brown Ministries, AskDr Brown Ministries. At the tip of your finger, you'll have at your disposal thousands of free resources. Yeah, so let us serve you and be a blessing to you. All right, getting back to my guest, Dr. Jennifer Morse. Jennifer, when I was growing up, my dad would often lovingly challenge things, I would say. He was senior lawyer in the New York Supreme Court, so a great critical legal thinker. And I would say, they say, and he'd say, who's they? Who's they?
Yeah.
And he did not just allow these generalities. I mean, with a smile, he would probe, and it was very helpful. I've never stopped thinking about that. If I make a statement, if someone else makes a statement, okay, who are these they people? So your books, The Sexual State, came out a few years back. It mentions how elite ideologies are destroying lives, and well, the church is right all along. Well, if there are elite ideologies, then there are elite ideologues. So
yep.
who are these people of whom you speak?
All right. Well, I'm glad you asked that. But before I answer that, I want to tell you, I'm going to sign up for your newsletter. And the Ruth Institute has a newsletter that sounds a lot like yours, Michael. And I have an idea that your people are my people.
Just come like on.
In the Bible, my people are your people and so on. But anyway, yes, the elite ideologies, the elitists that are destroying lives, the way I set up the book, The Sexual State, I break the whole chaos of the sexual revolution down into 3 basic core ideologies. So there's what I call the contraceptive ideology, which says sex and babies should be completely disconnected from each other. Sex should be a sterile activity. And that's what a good society is, right, is separating sex from babies. Then there's the divorce ideology, which says you can separate sex and babies from kids, from children, from having children. Sex and babies don't need to be connected with marriage in any way at all. Okay, and the basic idea there is kids are so resilient, they'll be fine no matter how many times you switch your sex partners, you know. That's the divorce ideology. And then thirdly, there's what I call the gender ideology, which is basically that the sex of the body is not particularly significant, and so therefore we can construct, deconstruct, and reconstruct everything that we want, starting with sex roles with the feminists. And now we're to the point where we're reconstructing our bodies with the transgender movement. But the underlying idea of all of that is that the sex of the body is not particularly significant, which, of course, is completely false in terms of nature and in terms of theology. You know, we can, both in the natural and the supernatural realm, we can reject that claim. But in each of the 3 sections, I get real specific about who these people are. Who have promoted the ideology, how they made money out of it, or they got power out of it. Okay, and I would say when people are promoting a destructive ideology, there's generally some combination of 3 motivations: power, money, and personal self-indulgence. You know, that's generally the mix. You know, and so if you look for example at the contraceptive ideology, the people who've been promoting that are the people who think there are too many people in the world. I mean, that goes back, well, it starts with Margaret Sanger and her whole eugenics idea that we need to make sure that poor people aren't having too many kids because they're not the fit. We want the fittest people to have more kids. We want college-educated, smart people to have kids. We don't want poor, dumb people to have kids. You know, that's her basic view. And that morphs into full-on, gosh, there's too many people in the world, which is John D. Rockefeller III. And that group of people, you know, Sanger's part of it, but it really takes off in the late 60s with the population bomb by Paul Ehrlich and all of that, which, of course, turned out to be completely untrue. But if you look at the billionaires, Michael, who believe there are too many people in the world, you will see that there are billionaires who have literally pumped billions of dollars into promoting contraception and abortion and unlimited sexual activity because they think there are too many people in the world. Warren Buffett, George Soros, Bill Gates, in addition to the Rockefellers back in the day, you know, who were kind of the first ones to get the whole thing started. So, and population control is a very ugly business. And, you know, I barely scratched the surface of all of that in the book, but it's clear that that's what those people are about finally.
Mm. Right. So, you know, I have to be honest, sometimes I can be a little naive about things and I could think that everybody has the best intentions, et cetera. And during the COVID crisis and questions about vaccines and things, and I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I encourage everyone to do the studies and do what they felt was best. You know, talk to the doctor, talk to friends, do what they felt was best. But I asked, you know, one doctor who was critical of vaccines and things, and I said, let me just ask you this. Your average doctor, do you think your average doctor is in the medical profession because they want to help people? Obviously, they make a good living from it, hopefully, but they want to help people. He said, yeah, the higher up you go on the rung, though, the further up you go on the corporate rung, the more it becomes a matter of greed. So I've had friends in the medical profession say there's a new drug that could really be a game changer, but it's the amount of millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars that have to be invested to get the drug to even be looked at and considered, and then it's going to do harm to this other big drug. So it's just like, all that to say that I understand that many times I may think, oh yeah, that's just someone's ideology. Yeah, but once you start making money out of it, once your empire is going to collapse, you know, I don't care how passionate someone is saying abortion is a woman's right and so on and so forth. When you get into the headquarters of Planned Parenthood, it's not compassion that's moving them. There are a whole lot of other things that are going to be moving them. And that's what you lay out and expose. Last question. We got to be quick here.
Okay.
So I'm more in the evangelical world and then intersecting with the Jewish world in different ways. I intersect a lot with Catholic friends, but I don't live in the Catholic world. The direction of the Catholic Church, do you see it as maintaining its important moral voice in these key issues, or do you see a real threat to that right now?
Oh, this current pontificate is a disaster from that perspective. I can't answer everything about that in a short period of time, you know,
but
there's simply no question that Pope Francis is not of the same caliber of John Paul II and Benedict the XVI. There's no question about that. And so what I tell all my Catholic friends to do is look, what we have to rely upon is the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which has it all there. Everything you need is all there. That was promulgated under John Paul's papacy. And when Cardinal Ratzinger, now who became Pope Benedict, Cardinal Ratzinger was the head of the doctrinal office, the main doctrinal office. And so the two of them put together the catechism, and that's what we as Catholics need to cling to. Pope Francis is not going to, just for the sake of a little bit of clarity, he will not say, gee, the teaching was incorrect in any kind of magisterial way. He will not confront it like that. What he is doing, what he's in the process of doing, is appointing people who will, through their pastoral practice, undermine the strength of that teaching. Okay, so he's not going to do a head-on, a collision with it, but what he's doing is steering it off the rails, partly by his own statements, which are not very clear, and which, you know, perhaps the ambiguity is deliberate. It happens often enough that one suspects a certain, at least indicative of a mindset, let's put it that way. And the appointments that he has made, there's simply no question that he has appointed people who are, let us say, to the far modernist end of the Catholic spectrum. But fortunately, there are still people within the Catholic Church who know what's right and who are going to stand with it. And, you know, some of us are going to have more in common with some of our brothers and sisters in other faiths than we do with some of the people in our own churches. You know, that's been our experience from the beginning of my work in this area, Michael. When I started working on Proposition 8 in California in 2008, that was a great interfaith experience where the Orthodox traditional people of every faith came together to make that work. And we kind of look at each other and go, you know, I'm more comfortable here with you guys at the mega church over here than I am at some of the more liberal Catholic churches, you know.
Yeah.
So I think the Lord's doing something very important there, Michael. It would take us a long time to talk about it all, but I think the Lord is driving us together in different ways. You know, you know, God can do these things. God can do that.
All right, friends, RuthInstitute.org. Check it out. I think you'll be enriched. I've used materials over the years to my own benefit and to help others. And Jennifer, I think I'm going to be quoting your Sexual State book in a book I'm currently finishing on igniting a cultural awakening. All right, let's talk again. Hopefully, not so many years in between. God bless. Thanks for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. We're out of time. We are out of time. Oh, tomorrow, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. You know where we're going to start? We're going to start talking about the name Jehovah. I'm really digging into the Hebrew. Then I'm going to answer a bunch of interesting Jewish questions. All right, don't miss the show.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.